Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our guest lawyer and former state Supreme Court Justice Robert Flanders. Thank you for joining us, Bob.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Voting on a proposed pension settlement is expected to wrap up today. If the case winds up going to trial, which side do you think has the better argument, Bob?
Well, I've always thought that the state had the better argument here because I frankly think that it's a stretch to conclude that a statute is tantamount to a contract. The judge here has ruled that it amounts to an implied contract, which is the linchpin to getting into a trial. But if that decision is wrong or if the Supreme Court disagrees with it, that could be the easy way out to the exit door here. And I wrote a case, the retired adjunct professor's case, when I was on the Supreme Court that basically said as much, that contracts, absent an indication expressly in a statute that it's to be treated as a contract, is not to be deemed a contract, but it's a policy decision by the legislature that can be changed at will. So I think in the long run here, if it were to go to trial and up to the Supreme Court, I would think that argument would carry the day. But it's a risk, and everyone knows that that's why cases settle, because the stakes are so high. And it's always better, if you can, to get an agreement, even though it may be a bad agreement in some ways, than risk and all the expense and difficulty of going to trial.
How about you, Scott? Do you agree with Justice Flanders that the state would seem to have an advantage here?
I do, and I think he's right about the settlement. I do think the Supreme Court might find a way to cut the baby in half and simply say, look, your pension is a property right. It's a contractual right. The COLAs, however, are the exclusive province of the state legislature. And if you did that, basically, you would ensure the system would not go bankrupt.
How about you, Maureen? Where do you come down on this? And do you think there would be more value in having this decided in court so there would be a definitive decision on whether the state can cut these kind of pension benefits?
In my opinion, although I'm not an attorney, I do think that the state has the better argument. And at one level, while it's nice to settle so this goes away, it leaves this huge question unresolved. One way around this would be if the case does go up to the Supreme Court, then they can do what they did in Central Falls with the bankruptcy. They can pay up on the back end. In other words, they can pass a law and make, you know, compensate people for what they lost, but compensate it on the terms of the legislature. So I think the ideal thing would be to get a definitive decision and then give back some benefits by virtue of statute to those people that have been disadvantaged or lost compensation.
Let's stay with Maureen here. Details on the settlement process have been shrouded in secrecy due to a gag order imposed by Superior Court Judge Sarah Taft Carter. We don't even know what the criteria is for determining what would constitute an approval or rejection of the settlement. Maureen, what do you think? Is this the right way to go to have so much secrecy on this?
I can understand why they don't want a lot of opinions, but this is really, my sense of this is they're making this up as they go along. I mean, and the idea is they want to see how the votes are and then construe some sort of a ruling. They want this settled, and I think she wants this settled. I'm disappointed in her. I don't think she's done a very good job, and I think she's trying to sort of get out of this, if you will, and get a settlement. I'm not so sure this is the right thing.
Robert Flanders, where do you come down on the wisdom of this gag order in the pension case?
I can't comment on the specifics of this gag order. My partner is representing some of the cities and towns in this case, so I can't comment on this specific gag order, but I will say this. Gag orders in general are disfavored because they are a prior restraint on free speech. So anytime you impose a prior restraint, it should come under the strictest scrutiny. And in the case of the press, it really does put limits on where they can get information. I mean, after all, the best source of information in these cases is typically the lawyers and the case, the people, the parties who know what's going on. And so it has implications for the press's ability to report accurately on what's happening here. So I think gag orders in general should be extremely disfavored. You want to preserve a fair trial for everybody, that's for sure. But there are sanctions that can be applied for those who abuse it. If a lawyer does something, says something that results in materially prejudicing the outcome, they can be disciplined after the fact.
Scott, we had Governor Raimondo in here recently, and she described gag orders as kind of pro forma in this kind of case. What do you say?
Well, they are, but boy, it certainly does, as the judge noted, put the people of Rhode Island and the media at a real disadvantage here in trying to get this out. The good news news is that once this thing is settled, it will have to go to the assembly and the political hierarchy, and then we'll see all the details, and there will be hopefully a vigorous debate on whether this is a good move or not.
Our guest, Robert Flanders, formerly served as one of the state-appointed receivers in Central Falls. That city is now on a more stable financial footing, but it came at the expense of some sharp cuts in pension benefits for retirees. Justice Flanders, what do you think Rodin's cities and towns need to do differently to avoid running into this kind of situation in the future?
Well, I think the case of Central Falls is emblematic of what's happening in other cities and towns, not just in Rhode Island, but elsewhere, where benefits for public employees have run ahead of the town's ability and the taxpayers' ability to fund them. So there needs to be a retrenchment, as has happened in Central Falls. Sometimes that can be painfully difficult, but it's needed, because absent that, you're just going to have paychecks with nothing behind them to back them up, because the cities and towns can't afford this. So I think Central Falls now has pushed the reset button, and they're on the path to a brighter future, but it took some pain to get there.
Scott, some critics say that situations like the one in Central Falls point to the shortcoming of public employee unions, because politicians will make deals where the bill comes due years in advance when they're no longer in office. What do you say?
That's true. I think that one of the big problems in Rhode Island is simply that our politicians bought political support with the taxpayers' money. And at some point, there's a day of reckoning for doing that. On the other hand, if you look back at the history of this, you look at public employees, when these unions first started, 50s and 60s, 70s, what happened was they got the same benefits as all of the companies, corporate America, gave to everyone. Everyone, even if you worked in a textile mill in those days, you got Blue Cross, you got a two-week vacation. You probably had a pension, and what's happened still is now the public sector is the only folks that are really heavily unionized. The private sector isn't, and you've created a culture of envy. Obviously, the taxpayers don't like paying for benefits that are better than they're getting at their job, and a lot of this is just corporate America ripping everybody off. I hate to say it.
Maureen, what is your read on how Rodin's cities and towns are doing now, and whether we'll see any others experience the kind of fiscal crisis that we saw a few years ago in Central Falls?
My read is that Central Falls sets a model. It reminds people that not only that this can this happen, but it also, I think, was a positive step in the sense that the town has regrouped, so it's come out of this. So I think, first of all, it's got to stop in terms of politicians kicking the can down the road. We've already capped the property taxes. So the squeeze is on. And I think the model of Central Falls provides an alternative, not a pleasant one. But if they don't do something about what's going on now, among some of these groups, particularly public safety people, they're going to wind up in the same boat. And I think that's a nice, unfortunate reality that they have to come to terms with.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott?
Great to be here.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And former State Supreme Court Justice Robert Flanders, presently a lawyer with Hinckley Allen.
Thanks, Ian.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at rapr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward.